Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the E2G Sports Network, home of the unsung sports grid. Visit us at E2GSports.com and follow us across the socials for up-to-the-minute sports news. This podcast is the property of E2G Sports, LLC. Now, it's time for the show.
Well, after the walk, it'll be Marcello at second, Medeiros on first. The pitcher comes set. Marcello and Medeiros extend their leads. Here's the pitch. Runners go. The pitch is a ball throw down to third, and he's safe. Medeiros down to second, and they've done it. It's the Double Steel Baseball Show with Robert Marcello and Adam Medeiros.
Happy Tuesday, everyone, and welcome to the Double Steel Baseball Show on the E2G Sports Network. We are the unsung sports grid. I'm Robert Marcello, along with Adam Medeiros and Brad Nichols. Hopefully, you guys' start of your week is going well. Normally, we're on Thursdays, but now we're switching to Tuesday nights. Works for everyone. It definitely works for this baseball season, as we'll be back next Tuesday, the same night that the AL wildcard game will be going on. So that's going to be really exciting. Guys, let's kind of go around the room and your kind of opening thoughts about anything baseball-related. Before you guys do that, though, if you want to call into the show anytime today, you can call at 516-387-1702. Whoever wants to start, go ahead.
Yeah, I got it. So I do want to start off by talking about the home run leaders in Major League Baseball. So it's always fun near the end of the season to look through who's leading in home runs or you know, who might be approaching maybe some milestones or some records and whatnot. And this year, it's a little bit unusual because Salvador Perez has tied Vlad Guerrero as it stands right now with 46 home runs on the season with about 6 to 7 games left to play. And, you know, normally in the past we've seen the guys hitting 60 and, you know, obviously Barry Bonds hit 70, but those days are long gone, especially with all the crap that pitchers were putting on the baseball earlier in the season. And obviously that's been taken away from them and some of these numbers have popped back up, but I thought it was a pretty interesting list and for a couple different reasons. So normally we see some of the big names, and I'm just going to throw one out there, guys like Pete Alonso, who, you know, are just home run mashers and they're always near the top of this list. But this year we have Salvador Perez and Vlad Guerrero tied with 46. Shohei Ohtani has 45, and obviously we know what a huge presence he is for the Angels. Marcus Semien, who Brad mentioned last week when we had that question about did Oakland regret not re-signing Semien, but he's sitting there with 43 home runs. He's also tied in all of baseball for the highest WAR with Juan Soto. So another kind of interesting stat. And at number five, which is really the focus of what my opening take here, is Fernando Tatis Jr., who has 41 home runs. But he's only played in 124 games. So the other guys have played 155, 155, 156, right? And Fernando Tatis is just a few home runs behind him with 41 home runs. And it kind of got me to thinking, all of the big names in baseball this year were hurt. All of those guys like Mookie Betts and Ronald Acuna Jr., Fernando Tatis missed a huge chunk of games. We lost Mike Trout for the season, and I just wonder how much different this league would have looked this year when instead we've got guys like Adam Duvall with 38 home runs and Matt Olson, Mitch Haniger. Just a very unusual kind of top of the list for home run hitters in baseball this season.
Yeah, that's been a really fun race to watch and has really underpinned what a lot of the arguments around the MVP, especially in the AL. And I believe Salvador Perez has now blown away the MLB record for most home runs by a catcher. And at this point in his career, even before there were some whispers about potential Hall of Fame nods, and I think this year, given how late he is in his career, still performing at such an elite level, I think that just gets more momentum as time goes on. My particular angle for tonight is just, you know, I sit back and reflect on the season, Robert and Adam, and I think specifically about things that could have been. And I think about, what I mean by that is injuries. right, which injuries do I think affected teams the most? And as I go through the list, you can see some of these injuries are for teams that are actually still in the hunt or still, you know, doing fine. But some of these injuries might have been resulting in teams that have maybe dropped off the list we would have been talking about them as being a contender right now, and they're not. So first and foremost, I'm going to start with the Mets, because the Mets lost what I believe to be the most cumulative amount of wins for their major players versus any other team in the major leagues, and that's Noah Syndergaard and Jake DeGrom. And the reason this came up and came to my mind today is because Noah Syndergaard is pitching today. And that was a conscious decision to bring him back. He hasn't pitched in a long time, and it's very low stakes, and he might not go for very long. But I think it was smart to get him back in the mound, get back in front of fans, and just give him a little bit of a taste. But I think between losing Syndergaard and Jacob deGrom, if you all remember, it wasn't that long ago, we were talking about the Mets at the top of the division in the NL East. They're now 74-82. And the reason for that is because they got into a really little bit of a pickle here where they had to face a lot of NL West teams. But I really think it really comes down to the fact that they lost two of their biggest arms and two of the biggest arms in baseball. Let's be real. Going down the list of others, the LA Angels lost Mike Trout for a long time. Anthony Rendon, Dylan Bundy, Justin Upton. That's a combined a lot of wins, and I feel like the LA Angels would have been more competitive had they had those players, especially given their potential MVP caliber, Shohei Ohtani being on the team. Other significant losses, if you think about the White Sox, they were plagued by losses from Rodon in the year. The Braves with Ozuna, Acuna Jr., Boyd, Soroka, Tomlin, just like huge losses there. But with the Braves, you've got a situation where they're actually in the division lead, so it's like kind of like a not so much of a loss. But at the end, there are some just big losses that I think about that I think really affected teams. And I think the most significant, honestly, is with the Mets because they were in a weak division and because they lost two of their biggest arms and two of the biggest arms in baseball. So I just like think about that and think about, you know, what could have been for the Mets. Not their year, but I think injuries, and the same thing for the Angels. Injuries were what really did them in this year.
And Brad, speaking on your thing with the Angels, and of course those injuries happened, and for that team to pay both of those guys as much as they do, they have to stay healthy. And going into next year, that's going to be probably their biggest. Not need, but they need to sit down with both of the players and discuss how are we going to handle this going forward, right? Because they have a lot of money invested in both of the players, and neither of them played more than 50% of the season. You had Mike Trout, which got hurt in June, I believe, or July, and he's been out since then, some on the same lines as Rendon, but I think he got hurt earlier in the year, so they're going to need both of those guys. But the Angels, even though they lost both of those guys, I mean, they've won a lot of games than they were supposed to be. They were predicted to be in last place. So I think for the Angels, you have to go into this offseason. Of course, you're upset that both of those guys aren't there, but they won a lot more games than they were supposed to. Because they were supposed to be a bad team. Oh, are you guys there?
Yes, I'm here. Yep.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I didn't know if you guys were still here. My apologies.
No worries.
So, with those opening remarks, we're going to move on. Once again, if you want to follow the show at any point, you can call it 516-387-1702. Taking a look at the American League, the AL East, the Tampa Rays have solidified their spot as AL East champions once again this year in the AL Central. Of course, we have the White Sox. And then in the AL West, you have the Astros currently leading by 4.5 games. But the series that, and then Adam, I liked your ideas. We were talking about it this morning. Let's unpack this Red Sox versus Yankees series over the weekend. Of course, the Yankees come into Fenway Park and sweep them. Sunday, the Red Sox had a chance. Saturday, the Red Sox had a chance. Friday was a complete wash. The Red Sox got down by 7 runs early, and they were never able to look back. So starting this whole weekend for the Red Sox coming in, it was about just winning one game. And the Red Sox probably wanted to take 2 out of 3. And this was a really good opportunity for the Red Sox to send a message to the New York Yankees that you're not going to come into Fenway Park and push us around, and you're not going to take that top wild card spot. Well, that's exactly what happened. Prior to the Yankees coming to Fenway Park, they beat up on the worst team in baseball in the Texas Rangers. But regardless of what MLB team it is, they beat up on them and they got the confidence after the weekend prior where they had no confidence at all and they were booing their ace, which is the only reason why they're even in this point in Gerrit Cole. So just unpacking the series as a whole, and Brad, if you're still with us, I'd like to start with you with this question. What are some of your takeaways from that series over this weekend at Fenway Park between the Red Sox and the Yankees?
Yeah, I mean, it was a mixed bag, right? There was poor play by the Red Sox, poor pitching, offensive woes, defensive kind of head scratchers, right? There's a little bit of umping that I know we want to get into that might have played a little bit of a role here. But the Yankees just came in and took care of business. And they did so on the Red Sox home turf, and it was just nasty overall. I came out of this weekend feeling kind of really upset for the Red Sox and really upset. If I was a Red Sox fan, I would be really upset with my team that they couldn't even take one of the three.
And Adam?
Yeah, the Red Sox got punched in the face by the Yankees, and it was supremely disappointing as a Red Sox fan to watch that. I mean, that's the situation where you're playing at home, you have a chance to bury the Yankees, or at least, at the very least, knock them back a few pegs and solidify yourself as that number one wild card so that you can play that wild card game at home before you have to go on the road and play Tampa Bay. So for them to let the Yankees come in, punch him in the face like that. And you guys had mentioned the whole umpiring thing, and I have my own take on the umpire thing, and we'll let Robert get into that when I'm done kind of bitching about the Red Sox here. But the good news for the Red Sox.
No question.
Yeah. Yeah, the good news for the Red Sox, though, is the remaining 6 games that they play, they should be able to mop, and I'm putting should in quotes here, they should be able to mop up on, I believe it's Baltimore. They're playing Baltimore right now for a 3-game series at 50 and 106. I mean, they have to sweep this team. They have to. And then they even go on the road, I believe it is it Washington, to end the year? I don't have it in front of me, but whatever it is,
yeah,
they have an easy schedule for the last day. I thought it was Washington. Oh,
and 3 right. To Washington, yeah.
Right, so they need to go at least at the very least 4-2 in those 6 games. Okay, they should go 5-1. I'll give them a loss somewhere along the line. But if the Red Sox can't mop up on Baltimore and the Nationals, who have completely checked out, obviously it's over for both of them. And in the meantime, you have the Yankees and the Blue Jays who are playing each other right now. We'll talk about that in a little bit. You still have a shot here. Even though you get knocked down, you're only a game back of the Yankees with 6 to play, and you've got the easy schedule from here on out. So it was very disappointing for the Red Sox. They were extremely hot using those yellow jerseys. You know, whatever magic that had is gone. The Yankees came in. They get a new pet turtle named Bronxy, and as soon as they got that new pet turtle, they're on a 6-game winning streak of their own. So hopefully the luck of Bronxy will kind of fade. The good news for the Red Sox right now is Toronto just took a 2-1 lead in the bottom of the 4th inning, and the Red Sox, of course, in the bottom of the 6th are up 2-0 on Baltimore. So as it stands right now, things are looking pretty good. One question, too, and I mentioned this to Brad. It was either yesterday or the day before. if you're the Red Sox, right, you have the Yankees and the Jays playing each other. If one of those teams sweeps the other one, would you rather the Yankees sweep the Blue Jays, or would you rather the Blue Jays sweep the Yankees? I'm curious, Robert, I'll ask you that. If you're, as the Red Sox fan, who would you rather see get swept, the team ahead of you or the team behind you?
And this is going to sound silly to say this, because I'm about to trash all over the New York Yankees as soon as you're done with the, with your point. Or I'm going to trash all over Major League Baseball, then I'm going to trash all over the Yankees.
Go ahead, Rob.
I'd rather the Yankees sweep the Toronto Blue Jays. Because then Toronto, because the Red Sox right now are in that second wild card spot, right? So if Toronto goes out and sweeps New York and we slip up against Baltimore, we're on the outside looking in. So I obviously don't want the Yankees in the playoffs because they have no business being there to begin with. The fact that they're even in the playoffs bothers me to no end, and we'll get into that. But I'd rather the Yankees sweep Toronto, so then the Red Sox, if they slip up against one of these bad teams, it probably won't be as a big a deal, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes sense, because the other side of that token is if the Blue Jays were to sweep the Yankees and the Red Sox can just take care of business against these two crap teams that they're going to be playing in the next week, then they could jump into the number one spot. If the Yankees sweep the Blue Jays, then the Yankees will solidify themselves. So it is kind of an interesting dynamic, and there's no guarantee that either one of these teams will sweep. I was just kind of curious, Robert, as to your thoughts there. So. Interesting.
I mean,
we'd like to see the Yankees, but it makes sense. It does make sense.
I take the opposite approach here. I would like the Blue Jays to sweep the Yankees, give the Red Sox a better chance at home field advantage with Sale on the mound. Mm-hmm. And so it would be Sale versus Robbie Ray most likely, which would be an excellent game to watch. Actually, probably a really boring game to watch if you're a fan looking for offense. But I think Sale at home has the Red Sox their best chance at winning the wild card game. Versus Sale away at either any stadium.
Yeah, it's an interesting little dynamic that we're running into, just the way the schedule worked out. But so anyway, Robert, those were my thoughts. Back to you.
I want to get into this whole conversation. I just want to preface this by saying this, and Adam, I completely agree with what you said earlier about, even though the umpiring wasn't good this weekend, that's not the reason why the Red Sox lost, and I just want to put it out there right now. What happened on Sunday night baseball with Joe West is unacceptable. Unacceptable. And you know what? If people want to call into the show and talk about it, by all means do so, or you disagree with me, call in at 516-387-1702. It's unacceptable what happened on Sunday night baseball. Joe West can't miss that call. You just can't miss it. Because that changed the whole complexity of the game. Next pitch, the Yankees take the lead. Stanton sends the ball deep into the night, and the game's over. To say the Red Sox don't get out of that inning and win the game. But Bobby Dalbec dropped the ball the play prior. So the Red Sox have no one to blame but themselves. But Major League Baseball cannot allow that to happen ever again, because that ruined the game. Joe S. ruined that baseball game on Sunday night. If you guys have anything to add to it, you can, but I'm disgusted by it, and it's embarrassing. I understand the guy's retiring at the end of the year, but he is a terrible, terrible umpire. And the fact that Major League Baseball doesn't take the lead of the National Football League and put into motion, the Red Sox are now tied with the Baltimore Orioles, 2-2. Chris Sale was left out for, I guess, one too many innings, and the score is now tied. Getting back to my point, if you guys have anything to say about what happened with Joe West on Sunday, by all means do so, but the MLB has to be able to review that play. You have to be able to call down to the umpires and say, hey, let's get this right, because that wasn't right. And the Yankees know it, and the Red Sox know it. So I don't know if you guys have anything to add to it.
Yeah, so I'll jump in. It's all right. I'll jump in. I do have something to add. So I understand that that was a blown call, right? And you already kind of touched on what I was going to say. Bobby Dalbec not catching that foul ball, number one, okay, before that call happened, that would have ended the inning. And a good defensive first baseman would have made that play, okay? Right now the Red Sox have Bobby Dalbec, who's a natural third baseman playing first base, and Kyle Schwarber, who's an outfielder playing first base, okay? If you have a guy who knows how to play first base, he easily makes that play, okay? Then the blown call happens. You still have an opportunity to get out of that inning, regardless of the blown call, regardless of the drop pop-up, okay? And then they just go out and they give up all those runs. They go on to lose the game. I have a very hard time blaming umpires most of the time in a lot of sports, because it's not just one call that decides a game. It might come at a very bad time that change, like you said, kind of change the complexity or the complexion of the game, right? It kind of flings the momentum the other way, or a guy hits a home run and they take the lead. I get all that. But at the same time, they still could have caught that pop-up and they still should have been able to get out of that inning, and they didn't. So I always have a problem just personally blaming the umpire for the whole thing happening. It was an awful call. I completely understand the point. Come on, get the guy out. You know what I mean? Make the play and get out of the inning, and you don't have to worry about that kind of thing. So, Brad, if you have anything to add, that's all I wanted to say.
I agree.
Okay, well, we will, move on. Chris Sale has been removed from the game. They'll put on a reliever. Red Sox are tied 2-2 against the Toronto Blue Jays. Chris Sale, not a very good pitching performance. Baltimore is one of the worst teams in baseball, and you let up a two-run homer and then get the first guy on one out. Chris Sale was pitching perfect before that and ruined his start. So, it's what it is. So now we're going to talk about the AL wild card, and it's kind of a crapshoot there, right? You have the Red Sox, the Yankees, the Blue Jays, and now the Seattle Mariners. The Seattle Mariners only 1.5 games back. Very much alive in the postseason. They have 3 games against Oakland, which they'll play the second of 2, and then there are 3 at home against the Angels. So Seattle very much alive. So either of you can start with this. What are your kind of takeaways, you know, in this late September? Now we have a week left, and Seattle has creeped themselves back in, and the Red Sox and Toronto and New York have kind of beaten each other up and allowed Seattle back in.
Yeah, go ahead, Brad.
No, I was going to say, I mean, quick point. For me, it's really about do the A's sort of cede to the Mariners at this stage, given that they're basically mathematically out of the race, or do the A's play them tough, right, and play that spoiler kind of, you know, Oakland, Seattle, they do kind of get at each other's throats, they get under each other's skin, and I think that the A's still play them tough personally. But we'll see what happens, right? Because if the Mariners can take a few games here, we've got a little bit of a problem on the AL East side, and they might need to be more not so worried about themselves, but worried about the Mariners coming in and scooping up that second division wild card spot.
Yeah, and just for me to add to that, I think it's still going to be a very difficult path for the Mariners. And that's mainly because the Yankees and the Blue Jays are playing each other. That ends up being a huge issue for Seattle, because you basically need 2 out of the 3 teams there to lose. And, you know, if 2 of them are playing each other, then especially with the Red Sox easy, in quote, schedule, it's going to be a very difficult path for the Mariners to end up leapfrogging 2 of the 3 teams when 2 of those 3 teams are playing each other. I mean, if like we mentioned before, the Mariners are probably rooting for the Yankees to sweep the Blue Jays and then have the Red Sox lose. That's the easiest path. But yeah, I mean, a game and a half back with 6-7 to go, they have a shot. I just don't think it's a very good shot. This race ultimately, in my opinion, will come just down to the Yankees, Red Sox, and Blue Jays. And I still think it'll end up being the Yankees and the Red Sox. I think it'll be a matter of who's home and who's away. But that, you know, that's just my kind of outlook on it. I don't see the Red Sox with the schedule they have losing enough games for either Toronto or Seattle to end up jumping over Boston. And in a perfect world, you know, maybe the Reds, the Yankees and the Blue Jays end up splitting or something and the Red Sox can sweep Baltimore. But like you just said, it's 2-2 now, Boston and Baltimore in the bottom of the sixth. I also see that the Yankees are threatening in the top of the fifth with they're still down 2-1. So as far as Seattle goes, I think it's a very slim chance for them to get in. They need a lot of things to break their way. And you know, obviously they just need to win games and kind of see what happens.
Yeah, I agree with Adam. If Toronto wasn't playing Baltimore right after, so even if they got swept by the Yankees, they still have Baltimore right after the Yankees. If Toronto had a little bit of a harder schedule, I think the Mariners had a clearer path to victory because Boston seems to be crumbling, even though they're playing shit teams. Yankees seem to be up on their goal. The only their best bet is wild card two, and that would have to be Red Sox and Blue Jays kind of crumbling. So, no, I agree with you. The calculus is really, 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 really precise. Unfortunately, the Blue Jays have the Orioles right after the Yankees, and they have basically a little bit of a feel good end of the season for themselves. Because while I feel like the Orioles can play spoiler for a team like the Red Sox, who are a little bit more unpredictable, for some reason, to me, the Blue Jays just show up in the Orioles at Camden Yards and hit like 15 home runs a game. You know, it's just like they're just when they need to ground and pound, they do. And I feel like Boston's a little more flaky than that, and that's why they're seeing struggles. But ace starter going up today, and now we're tied and he's out of the game. So it's just like I just feel like the calculus. You're right is really precise on the Mariners. They do have a chance, but unfortunately, the Blue Jays get the benefit of the Orioles after this Yankees series. No matter what happens, the Blue Jays still have a chance.
Yeah, just looking at that Blue Jays versus Yankees series, some of the pitching matches, Tyone and Ryu tonight, Colin Berrios, and then Kluber and Ray. Toronto is matching up toe-to-toe to the Yankees pitching-wise. Of course, I think Cole is a way much better pitcher than Berrios, but you have to say that overall the Red Sox now are going to be down 3-2. So that is not good news for the Red Sox. And then, guys, I'll be honest with you. I think this is really cool that we moved this show to Tuesday because now we are watching live and you're getting our live reactions as things are happening. I don't know about you two, but I think that's really cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. And next week will be even better. We'll be live potentially. I mean, it seems like it'll line up that way, but we'll be live during the American League wildcard game next week.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be really cool regardless of who plays. You know, I believe that game will somewhat be going on by the time we get on air, but you guys will catch us the middle part of the innings to the late innings, so that's really cool. So just now moving on to the National League, but before we move on from the American League, do either you or Adam or Brad have anything to add about the American League before we move on?
I do actually just have one more quick point that I wanted to make. I saw something pop up today about Shohei Ohtani, and I thought it was worth mentioning. So he came out, I want to say it was either yesterday or today. I'm not 100% sure, but he basically came out and said that winning was his top priority. And he also made a comment something like, I don't know the exact quote, but it was along the lines of, I love this team. I love the fans. I love the city I play in, but winning is my top priority. And that I feel like that just sent a severe message to the Los Angeles Angels that basically if they don't improve, he's leaving. And that's huge in my opinion because of how important he's been to that team, even though they've sucked this year. But can you guys imagine Shohei Ohtani being on a playoff contending team or even, I mean, put him on Tampa Bay or something, right? Think about how wild that would look if he were on the Red Sox or on the Blue Jays or on the Yankees. Or, I mean, pick any of these contenders and add Shohei Ohtani to that team, and they instantly become the favorite, in my opinion. So it's a huge message that Ohtani sent to the Los Angeles Angels. You guys need to improve this team. I'm not going to miss the playoffs again. And I'm sure other players, Mike Trout, on that team feel the same way. Like, let's go. We need to do something here.
Yep.
The New York Yankees have now taken a 3-2 lead against the Toronto Blue Jays, and I believe the top of the fifth, there's two outs and a runner at second base. So the Yankees, after being down 2-1, once again come back and score two runs of their own.
Good job. Yeah, so I just have one thing to also add to that as we peel out of the American League for the last time in the regular season. You know, we focus a lot in this show on team progression, division standings, and how teams are doing, which I think is great, right? Major League Baseball is a game of individuals, but at the end of the day, it's all about team performance and how the team does over a course of a long period of a season. So I thought it would be nice to reflect on some of the individual statistics that happen that are going on this year and where we might see some of the individual leaders of the American League land. And a lot of them, surprisingly or not surprisingly, are on contending teams. We see a lot of Houston Astros in the top of the American League batting average leaders. We see a lot of Chicago White Sox in the top of pitching leader statistics, as well as the Yankees and the Blue Jays. But I really want to focus in on the Blue Jays, because when we look at the league leaders in hits, as I look at the top five leaders in hits, three of the top five league leaders for the American League in hits are from the Toronto Blue Jays. Vlad Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette are 1 and 2, and Marcus Semien is number 5. Second on this is that 3 and 4 are on teams that are not contenders at all. So someone who has flown way under the radar this year is Whit Merrifield from the Kansas City Royals. Whit Merrifield has 177 hits. He has 40 stolen bases, and he leads the American League. And his batting average is near 300. He's had one of the best seasons of a player for the Royals in history. And lastly, Cedric Mullins, who is near and dear to my new heart living in Baltimore. Cedric Mullins is beloved by the Baltimore fans. He plays center field. The fans in center field yell to him. He always interacts with them, throws the ball, tries to hit the kids with the ball, get the ball to them every time. And, in fact, my son Raymond has a ball that Cedric Mullins threw to us and we caught. He's fourth in the American League in hits this year. He is one of the better position players and one of the better contact hitters in the major leagues, but he flies way under the radar because you got a team like the Baltimore that have 106 hits. I think we've already went over the home run record, the home run race earlier this year. For RBIs, it's largely the same, so I'm not going to begrudge that point. But I just want to take a step back too and just think about the batting average leaders and where their averages sit. So, you know, Robert, Adam, myself, we've grown up in the years of Tony Gwynn. Well, maybe not you, Robert, for Tony Gwynn, but other work like Dante Bichette, Larry Walker, folks, Bill Miller, folks who have really pushed the envelope in terms of batting average. Can you give me a ballpark? Hopefully you're not looking at this on your computer screens. Can you give me a ballpark for where you think the leading batting average is right now? What batting average percentage do you think is going to win the American League? Adam, you go first.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that's a tough one, especially since you've already revealed that some of those guys at the top of the hitting stats are on Toronto Blue Jays. You know, Vlad Guerrero was one? I know, I mean, he's not batting in the –
Vlad Guerrero, Bo Bichette, and Marcus Semien.
Right. Right, and if they lead the league in hits, but they don't generally have high batting averages, I mean, I'll say like 340.
All right, what's yours, Robert? Good. Give me a quick answer.
335.
So the leading batting average in the American League right now is 317. 317. And I don't know about you guys, but that shocks me.
That's kind of low.
Because I feel like
Very low.
Yeah, you think it'd be higher?
That feels really low. It should be higher. Vlad Guerrero doesn't have 317, but it is 315, so he's really close. But besides that, you've got – here's the top five. Yuli Gurriel, Michael Brantley, Vlad Guerrero Jr., Tim Anderson, and Nicky Lopez. batting average just isn't a stat that what it used to be. And I think we need to reflect on that, not now, maybe in the off season. But I won't spend any
more
time on that.
It's also tough when all the pitchers are cheating, you know.
I know. The beginning of this year was really tough. We had the most strikeouts. We had the most fly balls.
Right.
So, and we covered that, the sticky stuff episode. That was nasty. But, yeah, I just wanted to spend a little bit of time reflecting on cumulative stats in this 2021 season for American League counterparts. They're not what they're all cracked up to be. Some of them are exciting and some of them aren't. And some of them, you know, maybe don't line up with the way we used to think about baseball. So that's all.
Well,
thanks, Robert. Back to you.
Thanks, Brad. Brad, that was really insightful. I appreciate you bringing that up. Now moving it to the National League, the battle for the NL East. Brad, you've become a Phillies fan the past week or so. Adam, you're sticking
Woo-hoo!
With the Braves. Apparently they're playing each other right now, and I saw the last time, I'm just going to take a look here, the Braves, I believe, are still up 2-0. They have some men on base in the bottom of the inning, I think in the middle part of the game.
Hang them up,
the Braves,
Phillies.
Fake
news.
The Braves have those three.
Fake
the
news.
Have those three, against the Phillies, and then three at home against the Mets. The Phillies have the three in Atlanta, and then they finish up against the Miami Marlins. So I know which teams you guys are rooting for, but keeping biases aside, what is your outlook on the NL East as we come to the final weekend? I believe that the Atlanta Braves are going to hold on, but the Philadelphia Phillies, if they somehow went out and the Braves slip up, of course they'd get swept. So therefore, the Phillies would take over that spot. So you honestly never know. You never know. Just looking at the pitching matchups, of course, tonight you had Wheeler versus Morton. Tomorrow you'll have Nola versus Max Fried. Kyle Gibson on Thursday for the Phillies against Anderson on Thursday in Atlanta. So those pitching matchups similar to what's going on in the AL East, somewhat even between the two teams. Of course, you're looking at Nola and Fried as kind of the big matchup, and then on Thursday, Anderson has a sizable advantage against Gibson. So what is your fellow's outlook on the NL West, or NL, not West, we'll talk about the NL West later on in this segment about the National League, but what's your outlook on the NL East?
It is super fun, isn't it, Adam?
Go ahead, Brett. I'll go after you.
Well, I mean, all I was going to do was highlight the spectacular season of Charlie Morton. I was pretty down on Charlie Morton. I didn't really feel like he was a very spectacular pitcher going in. I know we had high hopes for him when he was in Pittsburgh, and maybe he was just on a bad team. But he would put up post ERAs of three, of high threes, high fours. Then he showed up on Houston, had a really good offense supporting him, and did a really great job with it. In the three seasons he played with them, he had 45 wins and 21 losses. His ERA was 3.25. And then he had a very abbreviated season last year, Tampa Bay Ray. It wasn't really that something you could really really dissect. But now with Atlanta, he has just been such an executioner. He has won. The thing about Charlie Morton, he seems to be winning the games that are most important, and he loses against the bad teams. But the thing about the playoffs is you're not going to play any bad teams. Charlie Morton rises to the occasion, and I've really enjoyed watching him pitch this year. He's pitching his best career year, and it's super fun and good for the Braves for getting him.
Brad, you just took all my points. You were supposed to be the Philly guy and talk about how great the Phillies have been,
well,
so that I could talk about how great I wanted to talk about how great the Atlanta Braves are, okay? So one thing I think that we can agree on when it comes to the National League West is all five of these teams have been monumental disappointments. I think we can all agree to that, right? The Braves are 83-72, which is they're 11 games over 500. For a team that went to the NLCS last year, ultimately losing to the Dodgers, I know a lot of people, myself included, had the Braves running away with this division and being a contender here in the National League. Unfortunately, losing Ronald Acuña Jr. hurt, but the one point that I did want to make about the Atlanta Braves was they went out at the trade deadline, they recognized what their issues were, and they loaded up. They had a lot of injuries. You mentioned it before, guys like Ozuna and Acuna, right? They were both out, and they went out at the trade deadline. They went and picked up Adam Duvall, who's just been creaming the ball this year, has a ton of home runs in the top five or six home runs in all of baseball this season. And they also went out and got guys like Jock Peterson from the Cubs. So Jorge Soler from the Royals. They recognized the issue, and they went out and they fixed it. They were in third place for the majority of the season. After the trade deadline, they really started to turn it on, and now they're 2.5 games up on the Phillies. This game tonight, we've been kind of focusing on the American League games, but I think this game tonight might be the single most important game on the docket today, and we do have three pretty important games going on. But the reason I say this one's important is if the Phillies were to win this game and they knock it to a game and a half with five or six to play, that's huge. If the Braves win this game, it's 3.5 back, and that's also huge. So this is a very, very important game, and I really feel like the Phillies needed to take at least 3 out of 4 in this series to vault themselves over the hump of the Braves and knock them down. Right now it's still 2-0. It's the top of the seventh, but the Phillies need to put something together here, or they're going to be staring at a 3.5 game hole with not a whole lot of games left to play. One other note too is the Braves have played one fewer game than the Phillies have. So they do have an extra game in there to play. So maybe that plays a factor in that, they are 2.5 games back. So that might play a factor at the end of the year where they have to go out and play an extra game. But ultimately, Brad, the Phillies will be hanging up their Philly Fanatic jerseys come the end of the season, as I said last week.
Well, taking a look at the NL Central.
I still really like this Philly Magic. I was just pulling for Bryce Harper this year. The game's not over. So we'll see. I think if the Phillies can take 2 out of 3 from the Braves, then you've got basically a 1.5 game. So what's really interesting about this situation is that the Braves get an option if they – so this is the fun part. The Braves get an optional game this year because of all the cancellations early on due to COVID and weather and all the like, that if the Braves are behind the Phillies or out of the wild card by some – well, they'd have to be behind the Phillies to be out of the wild card, right? If the Braves are behind the Phillies with the last game to play against the Rockies, which would be the last major league game, the Rockies have the option to play the Braves hard or not, right? So it will really come down to a Braves and a Rockies game, which is kind of surprising. So if you count that as a gimme, then you've almost got the Braves up by another half game, so they're actually up by 3. But if the Rockies decided to play them hard, man, wouldn't that be super fun? I'm cheering for the Phillies because I really like their comeback story. I really like Bryce Harper putting in his all. I think Bryce Harper gets the MVP this year regardless for the National League, regardless of whether the Phillies make the playoffs or not. And that was my case, and that's the case I'm going to stick to. Go ahead, Robert.
Well, taking a look at the NL Central, if you have, of course, the Milwaukee Brewers, they've already solidified, I believe, their division, winning it over the weekend. And then you have the Battle of California between the Dodgers and the Giants. Everyone thought that the Padres were going to be somewhat in the conversation to win a division title or even get into the postseason. They've completely fallen off. We'll get into that probably when the offseason comes around. So come back to us in November, and maybe we can have a conversation about the San Diego Padres. For the Giants, come at the end of the season, they have 3 against the Diamondbacks and then 3 against the Padres, both at home. The Dodgers have the Padres tonight for a 3-game series, and then they host the Milwaukee Brewers, which potentially could be a potential NLCS matchup if those two somehow meet. So, and Brad, I'm going to ask you this because you are somewhat of a baseball historian and look into stats and analytics. I believe it was 1961, and the Dodgers and the Giants were both New York teams at the time. They didn't make the move to West, and Bobby Thompson hit that famous home run, and they said the Giants won the pennant, and the Giants won the pennant. These memories are starting to come back now from these fans that are in their 70s or 80s where they haven't had this great of a title bout in a long time. What would you say is your overlying thoughts around the NL West as we head towards the last week, and both teams haven't clinched a division title just yet?
Yeah, to me, 100%.
Everybody knows what that sound is.
Yeah. To me, 100%, I'm going to drop my phone on the floor. To 100%, it's the San Francisco Giants fans versus the Los Angeles Dodgers fans. The Giants fans 100% come out for every game, win or lose, and they support their team through thick and thin. I said this last week. The Dodgers fans are flakes. They don't come out when the team is losing. They don't appreciate their team. And unless that team is willing to spend the most of any of their counterparts, then what is that team? And so, it's a big market team versus a small market team. San Francisco, though, being like a kind of hybrid, but the fans for San Francisco just show up, and I love it. And they also love the secret kind of like rivalry they have against the Oakland A's. I think the San Francisco Giants fans just always constantly through thick and thin have made it through. Look, the Giants have won like 3 world championships in this last 2 decades. That's not bad. That's like tops amongst their peers. And we should never forget that. And some of the players that were on some of those teams are still on this team right now. I like the Giants over the Dodgers. I like the Giants over the Dodgers because they're not sexy, and that's fine, right? Just like before when I said I believe that some teams win series, other teams win games, I think the Giants win series and the Dodgers win games. I think I like the Giants, and I really appreciate what the Giants have done this year. And, like, hey, shout out to their manager, right? Gabe Kapler. Killer management moves all year. Every single game he was making moves. Most pinch hit home runs this year, San Francisco Giants, right? Most moves going to the bullpen. Most bullpen strikeouts, lowest whip in the bullpen. These are smart moves. These are moves that are being made in the moment for matchup to matchup potential. And you don't think about that with baseball. You think about, I'll leave the guy in, everything will be fine. No. Get down to use the statistics and use them smart. And Gabe Kaplan's been doing that, and I love that. And the Giants have been doing it better than anyone in baseball this year, and their record shows it.
So you know what's an interesting point? And I was looking this up earlier today because I'm always into the betting odds. I looked up back in October of 2020 to see what the preseason odds were, right after the World Series ended last year. What were the odds that the Giants would win the World Series this season, which is the 2021 season? They were tied for 20th highest out of the 30 teams. Okay, they had just barely missed the expanded postseason last year, even with the shortened season, but they allowed more teams into the playoffs, and they missed the playoffs last year. They were plus 7,000 to win the World Series this year. And now if you look at them, just go and look at the standings. They're ahead of the Dodgers, who were everyone's odds-on favorite to win the World Series this season. And this might be stupid, but I still don't believe in the San Francisco Giants. And I know, it's a cardinal sin here I'm not rooting against the Giants, but to bet against the Giants winning the World Series. I just don't see a scenario where in a postseason series that they would be able to overcome the Dodgers. Now, a lot of that obviously hinges on the Dodgers here winning that one game play-in against the St. Louis Cardinals, who we can't ignore right now because they've won 16 straight games. They are, and they just tied the game. They were down 2-1. They just tied the game at home against Milwaukee. So, let's say the Cardinals let's say for the sake of argument that they lose a game here or there by the end of the season and they're not on a 24-game win streak heading into the one-game play-in against either the Dodgers or the Giants. The St. Louis Cardinals are a very, very scary team right now. And the winner of that NL West team, the game division, don't have to play in that game, and that's huge to me. So I don't really see a scenario where the Giants will end up winning the World Series, I think that the road they would have to go through, particularly if they have to play that wild card game against St. Louis, I feel like the Dodgers are still the Dodgers, and in a playoff series, I think they'll come to play.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, Adam. Every time I listen to the MLB pundits on MLB radio, on ESPN, they say things like you're saying. They say, the San Francisco Giants will prove to me that they're a good team when they win the World Series this year, because I just don't believe it. And they've been saying it all year. And can you imagine what kind of whiteboard material that brings the San Francisco Giants, right? Just like, go ahead, doubt us. Dare you.
Right.
Right. And they've been doubted all year, and they have the best record in the major leagues. But I love it. It's the same sentiment that so many experienced major league pundits have. And you're not different than them in that way. You're not different than them in that way at all. So.
No, and I think that the Giants have won this division. They're coming into this week with two games. They're not facing each other. Both of them are not playing, you know, the upper echelon of the league. The Brewers are playing the Dodgers. The Milwaukee Brewers have nothing to prove, and then they're not going to show them anything. So
that
series
and
a likely sweep for the Dodgers, because the Dodgers are going to be playing for something, and Milwaukee's playing for absolutely nothing, because they have no chance of – I don't believe they have the chance to get the best well, if the season ended today, do they have the best record in the National League, or is it going to be whoever wins that division? Because if that's the case, what are the Milwaukee Brewers playing for?
The Brewers have nothing to play for. Yeah, they have nothing to play for the rest of the year.
And they should show the Dodgers absolutely nothing.
They're going to end up playing – yeah, I'm sorry, the Brewers are just going to end up playing whoever wins the National League East, and that's essentially it. The only real battle in the National League right now – will be the Giants and the Dodgers to see who wins the division and who has to play the Cardinals in the play-in game. And just very briefly, Robert, and I'll throw it right back to you.
Sure.
A little bit of a disappointment for the Cincinnati Reds, right? We talked about it a while back where the Reds were actually leading this race. And of course it's very difficult when the team that's directly below you in the standings rattles off 16 in a row. But they didn't really play all that well themselves and ended up playing themselves out of it. I would have loved to have seen the Reds in, but, you know, we had that caller Seth last week, and Brad kind of echoed his thoughts, is the St. Louis Cardinals kind of feel like that team that has the good mix of veteran and young players, and guys like Nolan Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt, you know they want to end up in this playoff race. And I'm terrified if I'm either one of those National League West teams who has to play the Cardinals in that one-game play-in, because they're super hot right now. Obviously, far and away the hottest team in the league. Nobody else is even close to a 16-game win streak. I think the Yankees right now are on a 6-game win streak. That's the next closest. I'd be terrified if I'm either the Giants or the Dodgers heading into this last week of the season, because you're staring at the St. Louis Cardinals coming off the plane and playing in your home ballpark for that wild card game.
Yeah, and then I think ultimately the Giants are going to win this division, and because they have the two-game lead. And I think the San Francisco Giants, and it's odd because they're a big market franchise, but they don't have as many world championships as, you know, the Red Sox or the Yankees or the Cardinals or other teams. They're somewhat playing spoiler, and I think that – well, not spoiler. They're playing that underdog mentality of, oh, you're not going to believe in us. Keep not believing into us. And Brad, I think you make an excellent point there about the fact that nobody wants to really see them succeed, ultimately winning the championship. But the Giants and the Red Sox, I believe, have been the two biggest surprises this year. And if the Red Sox somehow don't make the postseason this year, them being one of the most surprising teams goes out of the window, and they'll become one of the more disappointing teams in baseball due to the fact because, you know, they had such a big comfortable lead in the middle part of the summer and let it slip away, and currently right now are losing to the Baltimore Orioles 3-2, and their offense for about the fifth or sixth straight game really hasn't been going, so that's going to be A question mark for sure heading into tomorrow is the Red Sox. We'll see what happens in the ninth inning, but it's not looking very good to them to come back in this game. So the last kind of topic that I wanted to get into and just kind of previewing next week for the postseason, I know that we'll come up with some great ideas, but we're definitely going to be previewing a lot of the playoff matchups. The AL wildcard game will be on during our show, so if you want to listen to that while you're watching that game, I know a lot of Boston fans will likely have their eyes on that. If the Red Sox do play in that game, we are assuming they will. But simply the way the Red Sox are playing right now,
that's not a great assumption.
But the way the Red Sox are playing right now, we're honestly not, and that's not an overreaction. It's just if Toronto finds a way to come back against the Yankees and the Red Sox lose this one, they're going to be tied for that second wild card spot. And whatever happens after that happens. If the Red Sox, by the end of this series against Baltimore, falls out of the playoffs, they will not get back in. So I just want to put that out there right now.
I agree.
Baltimore, and somehow Toronto pulls a miracle and sweeps the red-hot New York Yankees, the Red Sox will be finished. And there will be no point in watching the National Series. It'll be over. Because Baltimore, and Brad, this isn't because you're living in Maryland, but the Baltimore Orioles, like, for some odd reason, have it out for the Red Sox, and I don't understand why.
Little brother.
I'm not sure. What have we ever done to them? I don't know what it is, but every single time we play them late in the season, they give us trouble every time. I don't know what it is. And about 10 years ago, the Red Sox blew a 10-point.
It's honestly the Red Sox fans show up and act like Red Sox fans show up because of Camden Yards, and they act a little bit not nice.
I see. Well, that must explain it then. Before we go, just want to talk to you guys how excited you are for the postseason and kind of doing the show for the postseason as we're going to be doing our show through the playoffs, and we'll be doing some off-season shows too.
Yeah, dude, I'm pumped for the playoffs, and to be honest with you, I think this has been one of the better kind of endings to a season. You know, it's kind of interesting because nobody really thought Tampa Bay was going to be as good as they were, especially after all their little off-season moves. So I do want to give Tampa Bay a bit of a shout-out, 97-59. And to take an 8-9-10 game lead in the American League East is not something that's easy to do, but they've absolutely torn it up. And another one is the Houston Astros. I mean, I know I picked them to win this division, and – you know, that they've played very well this season. I just don't feel super confident in the Astros going into the postseason. But that being said, I still think that the Astros have a very good shot with making it to the World Series this year, only because the team that they would have to go through is Tampa Bay, and I don't feel super confident in Tampa Bay's rotation in the postseason. Whereas the Houston Astros, somebody like Brad's boy, Zach Greinke, that's somebody that you want on the mound in a playoff game. Brad, do you have anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, Zach Greinke just went out a couple days ago with a little bit of neck stiffness, so I feel like Zach Greinke's age is catching up with him. Look, I agree with you, Adam. The funny thing, the great thing about this baseball season is so much going on under the carpet, but above, if you take a 30,000-foot view, and you take a look at what has happened in the major leagues this year. Honestly, it's been the Giants, the Dodgers, and the Rays. They have absolutely dominated this year. And they have, even with all the adversity, with all of the changes, with all of the injuries, with all of the trades, they have hung on to their positions. And I get it. The Giants and Dodgers are unfortunately in the same division. But you know what? We'll see how that plays out. Giants, Dodgers, and the Rays have been the top three teams in the major league this year, and they have hung on to that since day one. I believe that holds for them this year, in a year where we have seen lots of fun stuff, lots of really cool stuff, but on a bounce-back COVID year, it's really about the team that provides consistency, and those are the three teams that have done it for us. And I think it's going to be either the Giants or the Dodgers against the Rays in the World Series. That's my major prediction for the end of this playoffs this year. Yep.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Well, fair enough. Well, that's going to do it for this week's show. Everyone, I appreciate you listening. And for Brad and Adam, I'm Robert Marchello. Thank you for everyone listening, and enjoy the rest of your Tuesday evening. We'll be back next Tuesday for another show live during the AL Wildcard game, so be sure to tune into that. And thank you for watching, or sorry, not watching, listening to the show. Thanks, everyone.
Ciao, ciao. Bye-bye.